Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Judge at the wall, can only watch. That one's gone.
Swung on, fly ball, left center, not that deep. On the run, Chisholm gives way. Giftis with a diving catch in left center. How about that? The pitch to Aaron Judge. Strike three call. Locked him up with a curveball on the inside corner. Three times tonight, Judge has been struck out. Eight in the game for Trevor Bauer. Allen with the two-strike pitch to Bird. A swing and a miss. Ball game. Got him with another curveball. So the Indians get their 20th shutout of the season. They win game one. Chisenhall tried to jump and turn out of the way, and he got nicked on the hand by the pitch. And Lindor to the plate, and the Indians have loaded them up again. Boy, one swing of the bat could get this place jumping again. A swing and a drive to deep right, away back, off the pole. A grand slam high off the right field foul pole. He's done it again. Now the pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left center. It is gone. Jay Bruce has come through again. Swung on, banged to third. Down the line it goes. Fair ball. Base hit into the corner. Here comes Jackson. The Indians win it.
Here's a drive. Right field. Way back there. And that one is gone. Greg Bird will touch them all. He takes Andrew Miller deep. Chapman, another payoff pitch. Swing and a high fly ball out towards center field. Hicks going back, got a bead on it, makes the catch. And the Yankees have forced game four.
Once we had a chance to visit today, took stock of kind of where we were with Tom one thrown in the bullpen, and then we actually got him up tonight. We just wanted to check on Trev, make sure he was okay. Once he was good to go, I think he'll be just fine.
Well, tonight was a fun game. Looking forward to another one tomorrow. It's always more nerve-wracking being in the dugout watching than it is being out there playing. Looking forward to my opportunity tomorrow for sure.
We were trying to piece drives together. We really were. We needed to score points, and we needed to put some drives together, and that's what we were trying to do. Just not enough good things. There were good things. We stopped ourselves when we, in the course of piecing drives together, we turned the ball over. That's the way I saw it.
Frustrated for sure. My job as a quarterback here is to do whatever I can to help win, and it's tough to do that when you're not in the game due to poor performance.
Yeah, it was a tough decision, but I figured if we make the first down, I mean, we got a chance to go score, like I said, and I think you got a chance to kind of put the game away. And if we don't make it, I mean, again, we got these guys, they got to go 98 yards, 97 yards, whatever it is, to go try to score. That decision can be a question. I get it. I thought our guys fought hard. We had our chances. Can't turn the ball over. You know, we're in scoring zone twice. Came away with nothing. Not so much as come away with nothing. The other team has the ball. Missed a couple field goals. I mean, that's the difference in the game.
There's not anybody that can say they played perfectly out there. Just like anything else, we'll go back to work and get him better. You know, that's the key. Not boils down to one play or one play. We had a number of things go wrong, but, you know, guys fought back and gave ourselves a chance.
You know, we just got to get into a rhythm earlier on offense. I wish I would have played better earlier in the game. I appreciate the effort our guys had. Great battle. It's a really good football team we just faced. You know, we got to, find a way to play a little bit better on offense, especially early on.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Holy goodness, what are we going to do with all of this? Welcome to the extravaganza on a Monday, the ninth afternoon in the month of October in the year of our Lord 2017, and we are just jam-packed. My God, baseball, out the you-know-what, division series are ramping up. In fact, game number four of the ALDS between the Red Sox and the Astros is being played as we speak. Game number four between the Indians and the Yankees is tonight. We had an NFL Sunday filled with all kinds of developments, some interesting for what they mean on the field, some of them very, very controversial off of the field. And, of course, we had the battle for Michigan. Little brother once again taking down Jim Harbaugh's Michigan Wolverines. So we are packed. We have a ton of things to get to today, and some of the stuff we can't even talk about now because we have a guest waiting. Normally, we don't start at the top of the show with one of our A-list guests that we have from time to time, but when Justin Rogers says, I got to go at the top of the show, we say, let's go with Justin Rogers at the top of the show. Justin, of course, is the outstanding beat writer covering the Detroit Lions for the Detroit News. He joins us now to break down the Lions' loss, disappointing loss indeed, to the Carolina Panthers and the resurgent Cam Newton yesterday at Ford Field. Justin, good to have you back on the program here in Toledo. My friend, how are you?
I had no idea I had that kind of pull. Maybe I should use it for my benefit more often.
Well, you know what? We know your schedule, and we will work around your – not too many guys we would do that for, by the way, but you are one that absolutely we do that for. So thanks,
Justin. I appreciate
it. Appreciate the time. You know, we heard a little clip there at the end of that montage Jim Cushman put together with Matthew Stafford talking about having to play better, obviously, and having to play better early, obviously, even in some of the wins. It's taking, you know, furious second-half comebacks and fourth-quarter comebacks to get wins in what has been, a pretty solid start, I think, even with the loss yesterday for the Lions. But it has been a very, very slow developing kind of a game plan for the offense really throughout the season, even in wins. And yesterday they just fell too far behind to catch up, even though they did get two more fourth quarter touchdown passes from Stafford. Why is the first half such a conundrum for Jim Bob Cooter and Matthew Stafford and who knows who else to figure out?
Yeah, I mean, this one actually started off kind of promising for the offense. They put together a nice drive to start the game. Probably should have had a touchdown, but Ebron couldn't hold on to it in the end zone, settled for the field goal. Third drive, they did get it in the end zone. So 10 points in three drives is, a good start. And then they just went into, the doldrums of doldrums. They couldn't get it across midfield for seven straight possessions. And that's a real quick way to let go of a lead. Defense wasn't tackling well. Stafford mentioned he could have played better. There was a couple third down throws during that stretch where he just missed his target or forced into areas where they had no chance. And, it quickly resulted in a 17-point deficit in the third quarter.
Yeah, well, there's no question. And you're right. It's good to point out the two scoring drives in the first three drives. And when we talk about the good start for the Lions in that regard, it is true. But what Matthew Stafford is talking about has been, and that clip we played has been kind of an issue. They seem to find their rhythm. They find their chemistry, whatever it is that you want to call it, later in games. And they did get better. And in fact, and I don't know if it was your column or one of your colleagues, but I was reading the Detroit News multiple columns, that it was described as padding his stats. He got some stat padding against a soft zone defense when they were knew they had a lead to protect and they weren't going to let anybody get behind them early, get behind them and score quickly in order to turn this thing back around. How do you assess Matthew Stafford's overall play, padding his stats late in games? And quite frankly, after signing that big contract, his numbers are down from where they were a year ago. His numbers are down really from where they've been over the course of the last several years. But again, they also still have a winning record at 3-2 thus far through five games. So how do you assess him?
Yeah, it's been a weird season for Matthew, and in part because a couple of the game plans were run-focused game plans on the road where they didn't lean on him a whole lot. So I don't put a whole lot into his stats at this point. I try to look at the efficiency numbers. And to the first three games, I liked what I saw. He's not turning the ball over. He's using his mobility when he needs to use it, which is a much improved facet of his game over the last two seasons, and was completing a really high percentage of his passes early in the season. Last two games, he has not been good. I do the little report cards after the game. I know they don't mean a whole lot, but, it is a full take assessment on a game, and I've graded him as a D-plus both games. I think he's not making enough plays to win. The pressure that his offensive line is allowing has been way too much, no question. But I think even when he's had a clean pocket, he's not making consistently the plays, the throws he needs to make. He's missing his receivers. He's putting balls into coverage. And, it's not the only reason they won the one game, but it's definitely not the only reason they lost against Carolina yesterday. There were so many problems in that game, blown coverages, missed tackles, terrible blocking, but, he was part of the reason they fell behind 17 points and were, having to furiously rally in the fourth quarter once again.
Justin, I read your grades for him last weekend, this week. I don't disagree with them at all. My question is about his health. Now, we know that there is a health problem now. We know he was limping noticeably in the huddle or, you know, between plays. And in fact, Jim Caldwell is not going to tell us exactly what his health status is right now or what his injuries are. Is that all brand new because of this game and particularly in the second half, or has he been healthy for the last couple of games overall at 100%?
Well, I think the cliche is fairly accurate. I mean, once the NFL season starts, anybody that's playing regularly is probably not at 100%, just given the nature of the sport, the collisions. But, I don't think his play was impacted by injuries until the fourth quarter yesterday. Okay. On that sixth sack, the final sack, he came up limping. He stayed in the game, but you could notice immediately on the very next snap, just the way he dropped back in the pocket, the feet shuffling, the 5-7 step drop. Was very much hampered, very little movement on that series. And he finished it out and he still completed 5 passes, including a touchdown on a rollout, which I imagine he was in considerable amount of pain on the rollout. It's the only time he moved on the entire drive. Went to the bench immediately after that, got, 6 rolls of tape thrown around that ankle. It looked like he was wearing a boot on top of his shoe. Came out, led another touchdown drive, but still the mobility was hampered. And so, we don't know the extent of the ankle injury, low ankle sprain, high ankle sprain. They're all kind of different. He's going to be getting, I'm sure, a steady dose of treatment all through the week. I would not be surprised, even though he doesn't have much of a history of missing practice, hasn't missed a practice due to injury since 2012, but I would not be surprised to see him limited in some capacity throughout this week as they try to get the ankle as healthy as possible heading into next Sunday's game in New Orleans.
Justin Rogers is a beat writer for the Lions for the Detroit News. Let's talk tight ends for a second. Eric Ebron, it's getting worse. Dropped a couple of crucial passes. Fans are frustrated. I'm sure Matthew Stafford is frustrated. And I would have thought, just under normal circumstances, that if Ebron struggled or continued to struggle, that Toledo product Michael Roberts would be getting a lot more opportunities. But instead it went to Darren Fells, who's supposed to be the blocking tight end, right? And he's the guy catching a couple of fourth-quarter touchdowns. What's going to be the future of this, the immediate, literally this coming week, the future of this position?
I think they have to continue to try to get Ebron right through playing. As a weapon, as an athlete, they can't replace his talent. He's at a different level athletically than Roberts and Fells, who are, two bigger guys. Roberts is probably the halfway point between Fells and Ebron. So they're really a nice complement. And if you take Ebron out of the offense, a guy that caught 60 balls for 700 yards in 13 games last season, you just don't have the skill set on the roster to replace that. And you really can't find that skill set on too many rosters in the entire NFL. So you knew drops were part of the resume with him, the scouting report with him coming out of college. You have to live with it to some extent. Right now it's bad. It seems like he's in his own head. He's put what I would consider 4 catchable balls on the ground out of 14 catchable targets. That's more than a quarter of opportunities that he's wasting. And, if it's 10%, that's probably more in the acceptable range for a guy that works across the middle of the field. You see that commonly with tight ends. But, right now, it's tough. I mean, I don't think they're going to give Fells a much larger chunk of that timeshare. They might reduce Ebron slightly, but I think more than likely they're going to try to find some nice easy passes to get him going, to get his confidence built back up, because they need him as part of this offense to be successful.
We're talking to Justin Rogers covering the Lions. They fell to 3-2 with the loss yesterday to Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. Jim Cushlin is with us as well. Jim's got a question for you, Justin.
And thinking about this team now at 3-2, they started off 2-0, Justin, lost that crazy, wacky finish in week 3 to Atlanta. So you could argue that could have been a win. Beat Minnesota, and then, at least for a couple quarters, had what I thought was their overall worst game against the Carolina team. So here they are sitting at 3-2, so they're still above 500. But my question is, 5 weeks into the season, is this still a playoff team?
Yeah, I think that this roster has proven that they have the talent to be a playoff roster. Obviously, health changes things very quickly in the NFL. One injury could change that picture. But, there's not many teams that are standing head and shoulders above in the NFC. I'd probably put the Falcons in that group, although they just lost a tough game to Buffalo. Green Bay's up there, and that's always your nemesis in the NFC North. You got to find a way to catch the Packers and win the division if you really want to make some noise. But, you know, 3-2, all games where they were in it, could have won it. It's kind of become the DNA of this roster that they can compete with anybody, but they also have the ability to stumble against anybody. And that's where they need to learn to separate themselves and finish games better. You know, when we first looked at the schedule when it came out, I think most people would say 3-3 in the first six is really what they needed to go and do. It was a really brutal start to the schedule based on just looking at it on paper. Once you get out to that 3-1 start, you start readjusting your expectations. I think this game in New Orleans is important. You really can't afford to go and lose two in a row now heading into your bye. You still got a brutal stretch coming out of that with primetime games against Pittsburgh and Green Bay. So to go 4-2, I think you'll still feel pretty good about your playoff chances.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say too, but you're right. You do readjust after starting out 3-1. You're thinking, okay, we can go better than 3-3 to start. And so I agree with you. The Saints game is important given the fact that the Steelers and Packers await in back-to-back weeks, although the Steelers are in a bit of a mess themselves. Ben Roethlisberger openly questioning whether or not he still has it anymore in his post-game comments after a five-pick day. We'll talk about them another time. Let's talk about the defense against a different quarterback, Cam Newton. Cam Newton looks like an MVP again. 2 years ago, obviously, he won that award. Last year, major steps backward. And then this week, he responds to a week of controversy and ridicule and embarrassment and sponsors dropping him, et cetera, over the little flap with the female reporter. And instead of letting that bother him or distract him, he came out and looked like the MVP again. What did you see from this defense and their approach to Cam Newton?
Yeah, the Lions' first priority every single week is stopping the run. And, you know, as Jim Caldwell likes to say, none of the stats matter, only wins matter. But he sure has been highlighting the success his defense had against the run, held him under, I believe, 30 yards as a team. And that's really impressive given, you know, they got the Newton, Stewart, McCaffrey trifecta back there. But in doing so, I would argue that they, you know, committed a little bit too much to the run and dared Cam to beat him. And listen, he's got a big boy arm. He may not have the history of the most accurate, passing game, you know, for his career, but he was sure on Sunday. He was making throws downfield with a lot of zip into tight windows. And made the Lions defensive backs, their secondary, which has looked very good this season, probably been their strongest unit on that defense. He made them look silly at times. Darius Slay, it's one of the worst games I've seen him play in quite some time. And, you know, credit to Cam. They dared him to beat him with his arm, and he did.
Yeah, and they got to him, a couple of times as far as sacks because, you know, the Lions have had a you know, really great run of putting pressure on quarterbacks too. So it's not like they have committed to stopping the run to the point where they don't have any opportunities to rush the passer. But, boy, you know, Cam Newton, when he gets in a groove, obviously, and he's feeling confident and he's making smart decisions quicker, he's very tough to stop. That quarterback rating of 141.8 is something that obviously the defense is really, really going to have to look at and figure out how they limit quarterbacks. As you point out with Roethlisberger and, I mean, well, Breeze, Roethlisberger, and Rodgers coming, that's no picnic for anybody. So just briefly, if we can, Justin, before we go, and we certainly appreciate the time always, looking at the rest of the conference, or excuse me, not the conference, the rest of the division. You got a Bears and Vikings matchup tonight. They are going with Mitchell Trubisky, are the Bears. How do you see that matchup, and how does that impact this division? Obviously, it's still tightly packed behind the 4-1 Packers.
Yeah, I really liked the way that Trubisky handled himself in the preseason. He looked, you know, pretty advanced for his age, for his experience level, even at the college level, switching to a pro scheme. Throws really well on the run, and of course, the Vikings defensive line is, you know, one of the more intimidating ones in the NFL. So it's going to be a really stiff first challenge for him. I believe Sam Bradford's going to be back. I think I had read that at some point.
I
would expect the Vikings to pull this game out, but, you know, I'm going to be tuned in because Trubisky's going to be in this division for a while if he's successful and, you know, just really had the makings of a promising young quarterback in the preseason. I want to see how it plays out in the regular season.
We've obviously been comparing the Lions to the Packers in the early going because they were both on top of the division going into this week together. You saw another come-from-behind Aaron Rodgers-led win yesterday against the Cowboys, who made the mistake of scoring with a minute 13 left. You know, it's weird. The Packers still don't strike me roster-wise, top to bottom on offense and defense, as, you know, the best team in the division. Well, maybe the best team in the division, but one of the, you know, a Super Bowl contender. It doesn't look like a Super Bowl type of roster. Yet here they sit at 4-1 because Aaron Rodgers covers up a lot of a lot of missing pieces.
That's exactly it. You know, when you have a great quarterback in this league, you can cover up for so much. And he is one of the elite transcendent talents, not just now, but really all time. We talked about efficiency earlier with Matthew Stafford, and that's how I judge him. You look at passer rating and QBR and all those stuff for all-time marks, and Rodgers is sitting at the top of the leaderboard. He does everything well. He has the mobility in and out of the pocket. And as long as he's there, Green Bay will always be the team to beat in the NFC North.
Yeah, I completely agree. And boy, he just really showed it again yesterday. And that's something, again, after watching Cam Newton carve up that defense yesterday the way that they did, or the way that he did, I should say, the Lions have got a lot to think about between the next three games against Breeze and Big Ben and then finally Aaron Rodgers as well.
Well, and now they got this running back there in Green Bay, and I know he's a young kid, and
right.
But man, he looks really good in the six quarters I've seen him play. So, you know, you add a play action game to Rodgers, and it's even worse.
That's a great point. That it makes them that much more dangerous. Like I said, they don't have the best roster, but they are starting to see some guys come on, and certainly he is one of them. All right, it's not Aaron Rodgers, it's Justin Rodgers, but just as efficient at what he does as Aaron is at what he does. That's what we'll say about the Detroit News beat writer covering the Detroit Lions. Justin, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you so much for making the time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You got it. Justin Rodgers joining us now. It's 3:29. Little update here because my television screen in front of me is showing me strange things. Kush?
Yes.
Do I see Justin Verlander on in relief?
Not only
in Boston, and did I just see the Red Sox take a 3-2 lead over the Astros with Justin on the mound? What happened?
You're not seeing weird things. That has actually happened. They called Justin Verlander out of the bullpen for Houston to protect a 2-1 lead in their game for all four series, by the way, playing today. This is the first of the four. And Justin Verlander serves up a 2-run homer that, you know, down that funky right field line in Fenway. Goes around the pole, home run. So, and I believe it was Andrew Benintendi who hit that. So, yeah, you are seeing all that correctly, Bob. Wow. It is 3-2 Red Sox off Verlander.
And they are just pulling everything out, both teams now, because FYI, Chris Sale is out in relief of Rick Porcello. He has gone two innings of hitless ball so far for the Red Sox. And Verlander now, as you point out, gives up the 2-run bomb, the unlikely scenario in which the new ace of the Astros, if you will, out there to protect that lead. So both aces, Verlander and Sale, on in relief, and it's a 3-2 game, and they are now in the bottom of the fifth. Boston leading Houston. They tie that up. And it's, I don't even know who's on in line to start game five for either one of those teams.
Well, in theory, it was supposed to be Verlander Sale in 2 days, but now, yeah, I don't know. If they're both going to be making multiple inning relief appearances now, then, yeah, they can't go Wednesday.
No, they're done. I mean, it's going to, and I don't know, again, I don't know where the exact rotation is. I'll have to look at them more closely to see if Keuchel is up or whoever might be.
Well, Keuchel pitched in game two, so if they take the.
So this would be the five.
Yep.
Yeah, it could be. It could be Keuchel. I know that's this. That's one thing that that when we talked about the Indians' rotation, the way that Terry Francona has had it set up, that if there was a Game 5, Kluber, by virtue of going in Game 2, would be on regular rest to go in Game 5. So maybe that's the situation there. And I don't know for the Red Sox. But really, really interesting development there. I mean, the Astros blew out the Sox twice in Houston to start this series. And now at Fenway, the Red Sox won Game 3. And now are threatening with the bottom of the fifth up 3-2 and Chris Sale on in relief to win game four and send this to a deciding game five. It could be something really, really interesting going on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And going into yesterday's two AL game threes, Bob, if I did with both of them, you know, Indians and the Astros leading 2-0, I would have said out of those two series, least likely to go five would have been Red Sox Astros. And now we're a couple innings away from that maybe happening.
That's exactly right. And of course, we're going to talk about the Indians. You heard a lot of that montage, two games since we've been last been on the air, the Friday game in which just one of the great playoff games you're ever going to see, an unbelievable comfort behind win for the Indians, down 8-3 in the sixth inning, down 8-3, and they get a grand slam from Francisco Lindor to pull within 8-7, then the solo shot in the eighth from Jay Bruce to tie it and ultimately send it into extras, And you heard what happened there in the 13th inning, Yan Gomes driving home Austin Jackson, former Tiger.
Yep.
With the game winner there in a 9-8 win, and it just looked like everything was lined up for the Indians to win this in a sweep.
Absolutely. And don't forget it all of that. Don't forget the part that's keeping Yankee fans all yelling this whole weekend. The hit by pitch, maybe not. Girardi doesn't challenge all that.
You know what? First of all, it wouldn't have been. I don't think it would have been overturned anyway. To me, I watched that time and time again, and I can't tell if it hits the nub of the bat or if it hits the bottom of his hand. But the ball does deflect, and I can't tell if it's past the nub and on the back hand or the bottom hand, if you will.
It is tricky, even in the super slow-mo, yeah.
And we all know the rule when it comes to instant replay. If it is not 100% clear and indisputable, right, that an error was made, then they go with the call in the field. And they don't know if an umpiring error was made, so you let it be. It would have stayed anyway. But at any rate, Carlos Carrasco goes out there for six innings yesterday and matches Masahiro Tanaka pitch for pitch, just strikeout duel going back and forth. And lo and behold, last year's one of the great playoff pitching performances, period, in postseason history for Andrew Miller last year between the divisional round, league championship series, and World Series, just the untouchable machine that was Miller time, comes back in trying to duplicate that and gives up the solo shot that ends up being the difference in a 1-0 loss for the Indians to the Yankees. And obviously we're going to talk much, much more about that and where that goes with Trevor Bauer getting the start on a short rest tonight in Game 4 for the Indians. And he will oppose Luis Severino, whose only postseason appearance this year and ever was in the wild card game, in which he did not last the first inning. In fact, just one-third of an inning. He is looking for redemption. The Indians are looking to tee off on him and put this thing away so they can await this Boston-Houston winner. So Maniloff is going to join us about 4:10 to talk about that. Right now, Jim Cushlin, let's talk about wild stuff.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
All right, your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. In the history of the best of five series in Major League Baseball playoffs, league championship series from 1969 to 1984, and divisionals from 95 until now, 88% of the time when a team is up 2-0, that team has won the series 66 times out of a total of 75. The last time a team rallied from down 0-2, just 2 years ago in 2015, when the Blue Jays came back against the Rangers with that infamous Jose Bautista bat flip. And now we could be on the verge of seeing it happen twice, with the Red Sox pushing potentially for a Game 5 and the Yankees, going tonight against the Indians. So there you have it, your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. Hey, Kush, before we get to the bottom of the hour, local sports center, major congratulations. As a matter of fact, I think it might be time to dig it. Congrats, and can you dig it, to Jackie Siebold from Maumee, because Jackie was the winner of the grand prize drawing that we had been registering you for and qualifying for on the airwaves over the last 3 weeks. Jackie has won the tickets European vacation. Congratulations to Jackie Siebold.
Can you dig it?
From Maumee. And thank you so much to our partners in all of that, Toledo Express Airport, the Toledo Port Authority, and, of course, American Airlines, and your friends here at ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. So congratulations to her. All right, we got a lot more to do today, a lot more to do this half hour. Sports Center coming up next right here on the
Right Now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5, The Ticket.
All right, 3:46 now as we roll on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. A reminder to you, we still want to put $1,000 in your pocket 4 times a day. An opportunity for you to listen weekdays at 9, noon, 3 p.m., and 6 p.m. for a keyword. Text that keyword when you hear it to 62582 for a chance at $1,000 four times a day. It's the 4K a day giveaway, only from Toledo Sports Leader, ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. More information is online at 106.5theticket.com. And once again, congratulations to the winner of the Ticket European Vacation, Jackie Siebold of Maumee. Good job and enjoy your trip across the pond. All right, I wanted to get a phone call here from Jimmy real quick because he wants to talk about baseball. But breaking news in the media/NFL world You probably already know that there was a bit of an incident yesterday in Indianapolis. Peyton Manning having his jersey retired. Former Indiana governor Mike Pence, big fan of the Colts and of Peyton Manning's, in attendance for that. Then saw 23 San Francisco 49ers kneeling during the playing of the national anthem and the presentation of the United States flag. Left with his wife immediately, tweeting he will not, along with the president, will not dignify events in which some of the participants are going to disrespect the flag, the anthem, and the United States of America. Touched off a huge firestorm, obviously. To me, it was a great example. Good for him. I wish more fans would have done it, too. But that's not where we stop. Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, who tried to thread the needle and play both sides of the aisle last time, last week, in which he got on a knee with all of his players before the playing of the national anthem, showing solidarity with the activists, trying to keep that side of his fan base happy and his players happy, then stood with them all for the national anthem, trying to keep his Middle America fans, the vast majority of whom make up the NFL's customer base, to keep them happy. Well, he has parted from that line of thinking. He is now all in. We will stand for the national anthem or you will be benched. That's right. You will not play if you don't stand on your feet for the anthem. He announced that yesterday before his team lost to the Green Bay Packers. ESPN flamethrower Jamel Hill jumped all over that directive and has now been suspended for 2 weeks without pay by the network. So just if you're scoring at home, calling the President of the United States and his supporters white supremacists in those words on Twitter is not a suspendable offense, but calling out Jerry Jones on Twitter and threatening to lead a boycott of Jerry Jones advertisers, which means directly impacting the pocket of the NFL, which directly impacts the pockets of ESPN, which is in a multi-billion dollar relationship with the NFL, that'll get you suspended. Yep, Jamel Hill out for 2 weeks now after attacking the Cowboys and Jerry Jones because of his orders of his players to stand for the anthem or be benched. Whew, we're not done, not by a long shot. But Jimmy's on the air, and he wants to talk about a little baseball right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead.
Yeah, unless you're Curt Schilling and you're the wrong color and you point out something that's factually true and you have the temerity to say it on air, that'll get you fired. But I digress. Oh, hey, Michigan. Well, before I get to you, hey, listen, A.J. Hinch, you just almost took Joe Girardi off as the stupidest manager in the playoffs by putting your Justin Verlander. Do you know who Justin Verlander is, A.J.? He's the guy you keep for game five if needed. You don't run him out in Fenway in the middle of the fifth inning and have him serve up a home run in that bandbox called Fenway. Okay?
Can you believe that?
Check with the Oakland A's, because Justin Verlander, he's a game fiver, man. In the ALDS, that guy shuts people down.
Isn't that why they traded for him? I mean, they traded for him to be the guy, to be the ace, the winner of game one and the closer or clincher, if you will, in game five if need be. And they're bringing him in out of the pen in game four. I don't get it either, man. I just don't.
I cannot believe that. I about died because I went to the Bleacher Report when I heard you say that. I'm like, I have no big deal. They'll run JV on game five in Houston. He'll do his thing. He's, you know, in the postseason in game fives in the ALDS, he's undefeated. I think he's 2-0, 3-0. He's ridiculous. I mean, there's been some really good
Now he's not going to be available. And Chris Sale won't either, which is strange. I mean, that isn't that weird? I mean, both managers put their aces in long relief.
I mean, it's only 3-2, so they may wind up winning anyways, but it's just stupid.
Top seven right now, and guess what? Sale looks great.
Yeah, he's thrown 46 pitches, so the backside is, he is definitely no longer available in 48 hours.
Yeah, no question about it. He's going to be done, but he looks like he could hold on for their win here.
Is it 3-2?
Yeah, still 3-2 in the bottom of Boston.
Yeah, that's just asinine. I mean, you'd almost better be he'd have been better off just running him out there from the very beginning and having him pitch on short rest to having him do his routine, running him out of the bullpen in the middle of an inning. I mean, come on, man.
Don't disagree that is just, at all.
He's won 9 out of his last 10 decisions. I mean, he's a stopper.
Yep.
That's just stupid.
Yeah, and I don't get it.
I love Ohio State. They're getting better. It's going to be fun to watch. I still don't know how Notre Dame is ranked 16 when they're only lost to Georgia by a point, but I guess it doesn't really matter. Everything will play out. Not that I'm a big fan of the Golden Domers, but I just love little brother beating up on big brother some more. Isn't that beautiful?
What is Mark D'Antonio against Michigan? Isn't he like
8-3
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ever since Michael
really
Hart.
Big brother there anymore.
Yeah, they are. They're the big brother. And UM is just, I like Jim Harbaugh. I thought it's a good hire. And obviously I don't know. He's just going to have to get him some quarterbacks. And the funny thing is by the time we roll.
Frustrated for sure. My job as a quarterback here is to do whatever I can to help win, and it's tough to do that when you're not in the game due to poor performance.
Yeah, it was a tough decision, but I figure if we make the first down, we got a chance to go score, like I said, and I think you got a chance to kind of put the game away. And if we don't make it, we got these guys, they got to go 98 yards, 97 yards, whatever it is, to go try to score. That decision can be a question. I get it. I thought our guys fought hard. We had our chances. Can't turn the ball over. We're in scoring zone twice. Came away with nothing. Not so much as come away with nothing. The other team has the ball. Missed a couple field goals. That's the difference in the game.
Bruce with a drive high in the air to right field. Judge at the wall. Can only watch. That one's gone.
Swung on. Fly ball. Left center. Not that deep. On the run. Chisholm gives way. Gibson with a diving catch in left center. How about that? The pitch to Aaron Judge. Strike three call. Locked him up with a curveball on the inside corner. Three times tonight, Judge has been struck out. 8 in the game for Trevor Bauer. Allen with a 2-strike pitch to Bird. A swing and a miss. Ball game. Got him with another curveball. So the Indians get their 20th shutout of the season. They win game one. Chisenhall tried to jump and turn out of the way, and he got nicked on the hand by the pitch. And Lindor to the plate, and the Indians have loaded them up again. Boy, one swing of the bat could get this place jumping again. A swing and a drive to deep right. Away back off the pole. A grand slam high off the right field foul pole. He's done it again. Now the pitch. Swung on, hit high, hit deep to left center. It is gone. Jay Brills has come through again. Swung on, banged to third. Down the line it goes. Fair ball. Base hit into the corner. Here comes Jackson. The Indians win it.
Here's a drive. Right field. Way back there. And that one is gone. Greg Bird will touch them all. He takes Andrew Miller deep.
Chapman, another payoff pitch. Swing and a high fly ball out towards center field. Hicks going back, got a bead on it, makes the catch. And the Yankees have forced game four.
Once we had a chance to visit today, took stock of kind of where we were with Tom one thrown in the bullpen, and then we actually got him up tonight. We just wanted to check on Trev, make sure he was okay. Once he was good to go, I think he'll be just fine.
Well, tonight was a fun game. Looking forward to another one tomorrow. It's always more nerve-wracking being in the dugout watching than it is being out there playing. Looking forward to my opportunity tomorrow for sure.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, it is 4:13 as we roll onward on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are. Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding day. All right, a lot of ground to cover here on baseball, a lot of ground to make up because we were not on after Friday's game, naturally. The unbelievable 13-inning affair highlighted by Frankie Lindor's grand slam to pull within one, Jay Bruce's solo shot in the eighth to tie it, and then, of course, Yan Gomes in the 13th. And this is our first day back, of course, after last night's unbelievable pitching duel, 1-0. The Yankees do force a game four, and you just heard Tito talking about it. Trevor Bauer will go on short rest for the Indians tonight, trying to advance to the American League Championship Series. Here to talk about all of that as well as maybe a word or two about the single worst professional franchise in all of North American professional sports, now 0-5, the Cleveland Browns. Our good friend Dennis Maniloff, who covers both those teams for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. D-Man, how are you, brother?
I'm fine, Bob. You are absolutely right in your description about the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I put that on Facebook today, D-Man, and I also added there is no second place. It's not like anybody is beating down their door for the title of worst pro sports franchise. They're just by themselves, in a class by themselves, and it's really a, if you don't root for them, it's a thing of wonder to behold. It's just really fascinating. If you do root for them, you bury your head and just pretend you live in another city or root for another team as a fan base. But be that right. As it may, there are good things to talk about if you are a fan of Cleveland sports, and that would be the Indians. They get another crack at advancing to the ALCS tonight. Trevor Bauer will go. But before we look ahead, let's look back, Dennis. Put Friday night's game to come from behind win, a win in which your ace and the very likely should be Cy Young Award winner Corey Kluber getting banged around for 2-3 innings. You have no business winning that game, and you come back and win it in the manner we just described. Put that into some perspective. Where does that rank for you as far as amazing Indians wins or Indians postseason wins?
I mean, it's right up there near the top. I mean, I'm always going to put, for my lifetime, the number one game for me is always going to be game one of the division series in 95 when Pena hits the home run to win it against the Red Sox, just because that was the first Indians playoff game I had ever seen. Okay. And so, you know, but this one the other night is right up there. It's a top five game. Just remarkable. You could have written a book about that game, and it's almost a shame that it happened in the division series as opposed to, you know, the World Series. But it will always be memorable regardless of what happens.
So what was the most improbable thing for you? That Corey Kluber on 6 days rest would get shelled, or, you know, if not shelled, he just obviously got banged around in those 3 innings or so that he was allowed to work, or that they had that kind of a comeback in them, that they would be able to nip and tuck their way back in after CC Sabathia was just tremendous following his first 2 innings in which he gave up a 3-2 lead. He just locked in on the Indians and handcuffed them. Girardi makes a very questionable decision about lifting him, and the Indians start chipping away at Chad Green and arguably baseball's best bullpen. I mean, it was, talk about an unlikely scenario. Kluber shouldn't have had that happen, but they really shouldn't have come back either.
Yeah, I look at it as degrees of improbability, Bob. And when you talk about, you know, what do I rank at the top, I mean, obviously I didn't expect Kluber to get hit like that, although I do respect the Yankees. You know, I think they have a very potent lineup, and they can hurt people if they're missing their spots and if their breaking pitches are not sharp like Kluber's weren't. So, you know, it's not like an absolute shock that the Yankees could knock around a good pitcher. I think when I look at that game and I say, you know, what jumps out at me as the most improbable of them all, it would be Chisenhall down in the count 0-2 against Chad Green. I mean, for all intents and purposes, that at bat is over, and the Yankees are leading 8-3 after 6 innings. And instead, Chisenhall, as he is apt to do on more than one occasion, fouls balls off. He spoils a 4 in a row.
Healing.
Yep.
Applies to cancer therapy.
Gets the pitch,
I discovered
the
inside
that winds up being the, you know, the questionable call.
I saw patients
the one that, if it were to be challenged, probably would have gone the
dance
Yankees' favor.
Helped in ways,
but just
I
the
never
fact
could
that
Chisenhall
was able to survive that at bat without a 3-pitch punch
therapist
out or a 3-pitch pop out.
Chronic pain.
Learn more at osu.edu.
Lindor's grand slam pop.
In terms of the offensive play today, you were balanced. You got off to a really quick start.
Jumps out
everybody kind of got in on the act. What was the key to such a successful
day? 8-3 Yankees after sixth inning with no issues whatsoever.
Pass. At one point, so I looked up, I think it was like 250, 250. That's our goal.
I don't give him enough credit.
And JT was very efficient with the throw game. And
focuses on is the.
Can you give us an update on Brandon Bowen, Coach?
Yeah, he's going to have surgery. It's a broken leg and heart. And, you know, he really comes such a long way. So you got to pray for him. We just did as a team. And next man up.
This has been the Urban Meyer Daily Show on the Ohio State IMG Sports Network.
What's on the menu at River Diner? How about the absolute best gyros in town? How about homemade hummus and grape grapes? Try our famous monster BLT with an unbelievable 1 pound of bacon on each sandwich. Or how about freshly made half-pound burgers located at the corner of Souter and Ottawa River Road on exit 209 off I-75 North. Check us out at riverdiner.com. That's riverdiner.com. Or download the app. The best American and Mediterranean fare in Toledo.
And also,
how will the recent massive data breach affect you? Is your personal information at risk? If you are a Discover credit card member, there's an important action you can take to help protect yourself right now. Go online and sign up for Discover's free Social Security alerts. Once activated, we will alert you if your Social Security number is found on any one of thousands of risky websites. Learn more and sign up for free alerts at discover.com/freealerts. Limitations apply.
I did say, though, that he blew it, even though as much as I like Girardi and respect him, I felt he blew it by not challenging based strictly on the reaction of his catcher, Gary Sanchez. I mean, when Gary Sanchez says, I know it went off the knob and then into my mitt, that's enough for me if I'm Joe Girardi. I'm like, okay, I'm challenging. I don't have to wait for a replay. I don't have to wait for the guys in the back. As soon as my catcher says, hey, Skip, I'm pretty daggone sure that that hit is knob. Let's check it. Then I'm good to go.
I'm okay with that point of view, too. But obviously the folks in New York who make those decisions when they do replay it aren't going to be listening to any catchers. And I think they didn't have incontrovertible, indisputable evidence that the wrong call was made, and I think it would have had to have stood.
Bob, let me tell you this, though. Yeah. You know who's ecstatic that Girardi didn't challenge? Is MLB. Because can you imagine the storm that hits MLB if he challenges and they don't reverse that call? Oh my goodness! You'd think that the world is ending because
right.
The Yankees got jacked up by MLB, and you know the classic Yankee centric mentality is already creeping in now, where you're reading that the Yankees, as I tweeted, are the first team in MLB history to advance to a league championship series when trailing the division series 2-1. I mean, just because they won last night, they're in the ALCS, according to some people.
That's a great point.
You know, some national people. And it's just, it's amazing what happens when the Yankees win one game.
Well, I mean, you know, if you listen to Fox 1 and the broadcast last night, tell me that John Sterling could have had any more of an excited call than the national guys on FS1 did last night after the home run. I mean, honestly, when you heard, did you listen to the game on television or did you listen to it another way?
Yeah, I was charting it off the TV, yes, Vesgersian and Smoltz.
I was blown away by that call when that shot was hit. I mean, it sounded like it came right out of the Yankee Entertainment System speakers, right out of Yankee broadcasting. They could not have cheered louder. I mean, it made the love fest for Kyle Schwarber in the series last year look like nothing. It was despicable and disgusting. So to your point about the national people and how they, you know, they're advancing the Yankees already, you're 100% right, which is why it's going to be that much more gratifying and satisfying when Trevor Bauer sticks it up their, you know, what's their noses, hopefully starting tonight. But real quick before we talk about tonight, Dennis, let's hit last night for a second. Nobody else could hit except for that one shot. Tanaka and Carrasco matching zeros, matching strikeout totals. It was something incredible. And unbelievably, it was the postseason magician that was Miller time that gave up the one shot. Something's wrong with Andrew Miller. It appears that it's very clear. He's not himself. He's not the guy we saw last year. He's not even the guy we saw in the first half this year. He cannot be counted upon to save the day again and again the way he was last year. How worried are you, not about Carrasco, who was fine, but about Miller last night?
Yeah, I think there's got to be some concern there, Bob. When I watch Andrew Miller pitch right now, I don't see a guy who has his legs under him 100%. And that's understandable given his knee issue that sidelined him this year. I don't think he trusts his legs 100%. And I think as a result, the slider doesn't have the finish that it usually does, and the fastball doesn't have the late life that he usually does. Now, that's not making an excuse for him, because you're responsible for what you put on the field, you know, regardless of your health level. And Greg Bird deserves credit for putting a heck of a nice swing on the heater, which was 96 miles an hour, but it was a very straight pitch right over the middle of the plate, which you generally don't see from Miller. So I don't think he's right physically. I don't think he trusts his legs. Just as when I watch the Indians' offense, I don't think by any means Michael Brantley is close to 100%, okay? Because the ankle issue has been as severe as it was, he's trying to play, but he's not using his lower half. And
let me interrupt your rant. Dennis, let me interrupt your rant, because I want to hit that point. Why Brantley in place of Encarnacion, though, instead of Chisenhall last night?
Well, I mean, I know. I guess because of Brantley's baseball card and what he's capable of doing. And, you know, I would trust
he's not
Brantley.
Right. You're right. You're 100% right. He's not right. I mean, you know, Tino's putting an unhealthy guy out there over a guy who can be a very productive hitter. Talking about Chisenhall, we just got done praising that AB on Friday night. I mean,
yeah.
I don't get that. I mean, I would love to have Encarnacion back, but if it isn't him, how is it not Chisenhall?
Yeah, I hear you. No, I hear you. And you know, I don't know. I'm going to side with Brantley even on one leg or one ankle in a case like this, because he's such a good hitter, and especially against the Tanaka with that kind of, you know, slider or a slider-splitter mix. You want a guy who can put the bat to the ball. But I get your point about Chisenhall, but I still think you go with Brantley as long as Brantley tells you that he can get it done. But when I watch Brantley swing the bat now, I don't see a lower half. I see nothing but everything above the hips. And when you do that as a hitter, even somebody as talented as Brantley, you're not going to succeed more often than not.
And that's precisely why I'm going the opposite way with you. If I'm Tito, I'm not listening to Brantley's words. I'm listening to Brantley's at-bats. I'm watching the at-bats, and I'm seeing the same thing you're seeing right now with no lower half. And I'm saying, sorry, kid, we're going to pinch hit you, but we can't put you up there with four ABs, not the way you look right now. We just can't do it. We got to get a better opportunity there. Let's advance. Let's go to tonight now. You're right. Nationally, they're all about the Yankee comeback. Bauer can't stifle them twice. He was so outstanding in game number one. Severino is due for a prime comeback. It was his first time ever in the postseason for the young kid in the wild card game, in which he didn't get out of the first. But he's calm now. He's had a chance to reflect. He's seen other guys lift him up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How does it play out tonight, Dennis?
I think the Yankees win. I predicted before the series it'd be a five-gamer and it would be a classic. You know, and I know I just said, well, everybody's crowning the Yankees. Look, I don't crown a team in a series until the series is over. That's my point. You know, people now say, oh, the Yankees are going to win. They're going to win. How do you know that? They're down 2-1. If they win, then great. But right now, the Indians have the lead. But I think by the end of tonight, the series will be tied. And, you know, because not that I think Bauer is going to be bad. I just think the Yankees are going to score, I don't know, 3, maybe 4 off them, finish maybe 5 or 6-2, something in that neighborhood. You know, I see the Yankees winning the game. I see Severino bouncing back. I believed all along that this series would come down to the Cy Young for the Cleveland Indians performing at a Cy Young level in a deciding, you know, win or go home game, and I'm sticking to that.
If it does come to that, that would mean obviously that Bauer is unable to get these guys out for a second straight start. You know, for some guys, I can't remember who I heard talking about this. It might have been Buster Olney earlier today. for some guys, short rest is you know, the death trap. They think they can do it. They think they have the strength. They tell their skipper, I'm game, let's go, and they just don't have it the way they did before, you know, on the regular rest. But I think it was Buster who said, Trevor Bauer throws every day. There is no such thing as short rest with him. His arm and his training methods, we know it was obviously very controversial when he first came to the Indians in that trade. You know, there was a lot of push and shove and about how to train himself, et cetera. But while that has been toned down, he still kind of does things differently than other guys. And I think it was Buster who said, this will not be a problem for him because his arm is just trained differently than other guys' arms. You buy that? What do you expect out of him?
Well, I agree. But if anybody's equipped to pitch on short rest in the major leagues, not just in this division series, but anywhere in the majors, it's Trevor Bauer because of, you know, how he prepares himself and what he does in between starts and what he believes about throwing, his throwing philosophy. So when I say that I think Bauer will give up a few runs, I'm not saying it's going to be because of short rest. I'm just going to say because the Yankees have dangerous hitters. Who can do damage, especially in their building and, you know, in the short porch in right. So, no, well, when I say that, and even if I say Bauer's given up three, maybe four, if he gives up 3-6 or 3-7, it's still a quality start by the John Lowe definition. So I'm not saying Bauer will be bad, and certainly not because of the 3 days rest.
No, I understand. I'm not saying you're saying that he will lose because of 3 days rest. I'm just wondering,
how do you think
he will perform? If they lose, is it going to be in a pitcher's duel because he'll be great, or you expect them to have him figured out a little bit after that first time around in game one?
The latter. Yeah, the latter. And you know, I think they'll have a better feel for what they need to do against Bauer. And, you know, Bauer maybe have to make some adjustments pitching in the boogie down, although he did succeed there earlier this year in the regular season. But, again, bottom line, if Bauer does not succeed tonight, it's not going to be because of 3 days rest. It's going to be because he made bad pitches or the Yankees hit good pitches or the Yankees hit mistakes. And also, Bob, remember this. Francona would never say it, but one of the reasons I think that he wanted to go with Bauer 1, Kluber 2 is because he felt more comfortable with Bauer on short rest than he did Kluber on short rest. So
that makes sense.
That was it, and then that thinking was for game four. So this is a night where, you know, Francona can look really, really smart on top of the fact that he, you know, that Bauer made him look good in game one. This is the game I think that Francona was pointing to why he went Bauer 1, Kluber 2. Because he said, in game four, I'm more comfortable bringing Bauer back on short rest, and if need be, I've got Kluber game five full rest.
All right, while you're giving Tito Francona credit and looking smart for Bauer in game one, do you look at him with any less esteem for Kluber's performance in game two? I believe Kluber has said, or at least it has gotten out, that Kluber prefers working on 5 days, not short rest, not long rest either, not an extra day, which is what he had by going in game two. Did that contribute to his poor outing, do you think? Or is it, well, to what do you attribute that poor outing?
Well, it's possible, Bob. It is, because when I watched Kluber, you know, in that game, the breaking stuff, which is his bread and butter, there's no question. He has that wipeout power curve slurve. You know, some call it a slider, some call it a curve, some call it a slurve. His various breaking pitches are his bread and butter. They are what he rides to dominant outings. And they just didn't have the finish that they typically have. And, of course, he was missing spots, too. But I've seen him overcome mislocation with that Bugs Bunny breaking stuff. And, you know, it covers a lot of sins. So when you see a guy who doesn't have finish on his pitches when he normally does, one of the things you can wonder about is, okay, you know, did he have too much rest? Was he too rested and too relaxed and too strong? You know, that perhaps he threw the break sometimes within, you know, that type of thing. So I guess you could make the case or question whether not pitching exactly when he normally does threw him off his game. And we may find that out. I mean, I guess we will find that out in game five if it happens, because it'll be normal rest for Kluber, and we'll see if he's sharp.
Dennis Manilow joining us from Cleveland, where the they're in New York, of course, in the Bronx, but the Indians fans are excited about game number four tonight, Trevor Bauer against Luis Severino. It'll be a very interesting second start in the playoffs for both those guys. Bauer was outstanding in game one. Severino got rocked in the wild card game, but they ended up winning despite that effort. Real quick, Dennis, I've only got about 4 or 5 minutes with you for the clowns, and I'm going to call them that until they cease being clownish. It's beyond embarrassing for fans of that team. In my estimation, they're the worst run franchise in all franchises, all of professional sports. I think almost everybody kind of agreed that even though they got off to a tough start, there was going to be an opportunity to win some games in the threesome between the Colts, minus Andrew Luck, the Bengals, who were winless at the time, and the Jets, who were going to be maybe in competition with the Browns for the number one overall pick in this coming draft. So after tough games against the Steelers and Ravens, that's when they were going to finally start to show some progress and get some W's. They're 0-3 in those three games. They're 0-5 overall. They've got the Texans, although the Texans are going to be minus Watt and Merciless this week, so that certainly helps if it's Kevin Hogan or Deshaun Kizer. But I don't see a favorite there. I don't see them favored against the Titans. And I looked at Vikings, Lions, Jaguars, Bengals, Chargers, Packers, Ravens, and Bears, and season ending against the Steelers. We'll see where the Bears are come week 16, but Dennis, I don't see them being favored ever. What do you make of this woebegone, once proud, now a national laughingstock franchise?
I don't know, Bob. I'm almost speechless. It is a debacle. I've been one of those people who's preached patience, especially with the new regime, but listen, I mean, it's a results-oriented business, and all you have to do is point to Hugh Jackson's presser today, Bob France, where he declared that winning is number one on the priority list over development. Okay, now, to my recollection, that's the first time that Hugh Jackson has said that. I don't know, maybe he has before, but he went out of his way to say, you know, when you look at the priority list of this franchise, winning is number one. And that, to me, is short of a panic statement, it is a very interesting statement that Jackson made, because that sounds to me like a guy who's now feeling the heat, where you can't hide behind the seven-year build or the 20-year rebuild or what have you. Now it's like, you know what? I don't care if you've got the youngest roster in the league. I don't care if it's inexperienced and you're breaking in a new quarterback, blah, blah, blah. You got to win games, pal. That's what I think Jackson is feeling right now.
But Dennis, let me interrupt on that.
I don't know where you see another victory. I don't.
I don't either. I mean, they could become the first team ever to go from 1-15 to 0-16 in back-to-back years. I mean, I honestly think they can. I think they have it in them. They are that subpar in their roster, in their coaching, in their front office. It is just from their owner, it is just a debacle beyond any kind of understanding or contemplation. But Dennis. And it starts to me with the owner saying, you know what, we got to turn our franchise around. We're going to hire a lawyer and a baseball scout and tell them to go run our front office. That's dynamic. I love that. But, Dennis, back to Hugh in the press conference, if he declared that winning is the most important thing right now, isn't that a self-indictment? He is saying that we're not losing these games because we're trying to build and we're trying to evaluate young talent, et cetera, that we are trying our best to win right now. If he is saying this is what we're trying to do, win right now, that's number one, and he is 1-20 as a coach in this organization, didn't he just fire himself? If he's saying I'm trying my best to win right now and we still can't do it, and we can't even blame on the build or the process or the whatever, he just fired himself as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Bob, I think he's saying it starting now, okay?
It wasn't the big thing for the first 5 weeks or so. It's now, for the remaining 11 games, it'll be the thing.
Right. He wants the clock to start now because he doesn't want to be held responsible for 1-20. Okay. I think that's how I read what he said today. Because he was even throwing it out at the media, you know, trying to stir up this pseudo angst, you know, tangling with the Cleveland media. You guys said this, you guys said that. And he's like, yeah, what am I, 1-30 or something like that? You know, I mean, he knew he has an, he knows what his record is, but he threw out, I think, 1-30, and of course it was, you know, he's trying to get a laugh or two. But the bottom line is, I think Hugh Jackson signaled today, all right, you guys wipe the slate clean for me on the first 21 games of my tenure, and now you can start the clock on me. And the reason I think that he said it that way, or he was trying to imply that or get that point across, is the move on Sunday to bench Kaiser for Hogan. Because that, to me, was Hugh Jackson saying, I don't care about the development of Kaiser right now, who is my franchise quarterback, our future quarterback in his mind. I want to win now, and if I run Kaiser out the second half of the Jets, we are not going to have a chance to win the way he's playing.
Does
that's
that
what
mean
I think.
Hogan is the starter next week?
I would bet you know, a bag of Doritos on it for sure, Bob. I'm everything he said today leads me to believe, as I tweeted, I said I read between or listen between the lines. It certainly sounds like Hogan is going to be his guy in Houston. Because, and again, I'm not saying that Jackson has abandoned Kaiser as his guy. He just thinks that right now, at this moment, Kevin Hogan runs the offense better and therefore gives him a better chance to win. And that's what it comes down to at this moment.
If Kevin Hogan gives them the best chance to win over DeShone Kaiser, and I'm not saying that's wrong, by the way, and Hugh Jackson is acknowledging as much, doesn't Hugh Jackson have to be held accountable for the decision to jettison Brock Osweiler in the first place for choosing DeShone Kaiser? Because it would seem to me if Kaiser isn't ready, and clearly watching him and looking at his numbers, he isn't, and I understand that, and I say that with no malice, of course, here as we broadcast live in DeShone Kaiser's hometown. You know, as a Toledo Central Catholic graduate and a Notre Dame graduate or Notre Dame alum. But Dennis, I mean, he could have very easily said, we're going to let DeShone learn behind an established guy, established as it may be. He's at least a veteran talking about Brock Osweiler. So is the move to Hogan now an admission that if he had it to do over again, he would have kept Osweiler and started him?
I don't think it is, Bob, because we'll never know what went on behind the scenes in terms of who was making the calls on which guys to bring in. We won't know exactly who was in favor of bringing Osweiler in for that pick. We think it was the front office. Okay, so if that's the case, then Jackson had Osweiler forced upon him. He had no intention of having Osweiler, but the front office wanted that pick so badly that they made the trade to purchase the pick by picking up Osweiler's contract. So there could be a defense of Jackson to say he never wanted Osweiler in the first place. You could defend Jackson by saying when he claimed that Kessler, trust me, he was only saying that because he was trying to, because he knew he didn't want to bring any competition in for Robert Griffin, which, by the way, you can blame Jackson for on that one, you know, that Robert Griffin was supposed to be that. So I guess you could spread blame all around, but every camp, every defender of each one of those guys, be it Haslam or Brown or DePodesta or, you know, the scouting staff or Jackson, they're all going to have their viewpoints. They're going to have their defenses. So I don't know where the blame lies on certain QBs. I just know that at this moment, Hugh Jackson thinks that Kevin Hogan's his best option to win a game.
Yeah, and you're probably right. He probably does. It's just a really strange thing to me, and I'll tell you this. If it is being handed down now, and I know you got to run here, but you said, I asked you if he regretted the Osweiler thing, and you said, well, maybe it's not up to him as far as who's making decisions about who's brought in. But once somebody is brought in and the roster is provided to him by Sashi Brown, which is his job, doesn't Hugh get to decide who starts and who doesn't start? Doesn't he get to make the on-field decisions? He could have set Brock as my starting quarterback, no matter what. As long as that's what Sashi gave him, right?
Yeah. I hear you, but I think he was eager to show off his shiny new toy, Kizer. I really believe that Jackson loves Kizer and thinks that Kaiser's his guy for the long term.
Yeah, and he probably will be, but not for the present.
But at this point, he doesn't think that Kizer gives him the best chance to win because Kaiser's decision-making is not fast enough,
right,
and he's not processing the game the way he needs to run Jackson's offense the best.
Dennis Mantelov breaking down baseball and football for us like nobody else. D-Man, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob.
You got it. All right, it's 4:44. We're a little late here, so what do you say? We'll hook you up with something fun to make up for being a little bit late. I've got a pair of passes, Halloween season in full effect. How'd you like to go to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont? I got a pair for you right now if you're caller 6 to 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. Haunted Hydro in Fremont. The scaring is awaiting you. Just go and get yourself out to Fremont. Caller 6. That prize is yours, and we'll be back right after this.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We are winding it down and getting ready for a little drive time coming up at 5 o'clock with Mr. Mike Miller and updating you on the American League Division Series Game 4 battle between the Astros and the Red Sox. We laid it out for you before. The Astros were leading. They brought in Justin Verlander, who you would think would be their Game 5 starter, in long relief. Red Sox did the same thing with Chris Sale. And Verlander was brought in to hold the lead, promptly gave up the lead with a two-run shot. It was 3-2 Boston, but now the Astros have fought back to retake the lead 4-3 so they could close this whole thing out. It's the top of the ninth right now.
Yep.
It is top of the ninth right now, and it could very well be that the Astros close this thing out.
And those runs for Houston to tie and take the lead off of Sale, Craig Kimbrell gave up the hit, but the run charged to Sale. So as of right now, Sale's in line for the loss.
Tell you what, Jim, it's the weirdest thing with the ace starting pitchers in this postseason, particularly in the American League, but also in the National League. Looking at Clayton Kershaw, who got a very dubious win, giving up 5 runs, I think it was. Anyway, but, you know, Severino of the Yankees banged around in the wild card game. Sale banged around and lost. Kluber banged around and got a no decision. Only Verlander, really, in his first start, as far as the aces goes, was really what he was supposed to be. And then, of course, he even got banged here in this situation as well as Sale. So just a very strange situation. But at any rate, that's where they are in the ALDS. Indians and Yankees start just after 7 o'clock tonight in Game 4 of that series, Bauer against Severino. And as we wrap this up, I want to remind you of the outstanding opportunity you have with our Border Battle Contest. It is now underway, a chance for you from ESPN 106.5 The Ticket and Yuengling to attend the Michigan-Ohio State game November 25th at the Big House with limo service provided by Total Image Limousine. The runner-up of that contest, by the way, gets a trip for two to the Big Ten Championship game on December 2nd at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Chance to qualify, register one time at 106.5theticket.com or text the words Border Battle, actually one word, Border Battle, altogether, to 64636. Those who qualify will attend our giveaway party Thursday night, November 16th at the Blarney downtown. All brought to you by Yuengling, True House of Munch, Getco Transportation, Churchill's, Country Hearth, Pass Electronics, Distracted Haunted House, and your football freaks right here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. That's where we'll have to leave it for today. We left a lot of meat on the bone. We will pick at it a little bit more tomorrow, and hopefully we'll be talking about a finalized American League Championship Series. That'll be tomorrow at 3 o'clock. But for now, stay where you are, because Drive Time with Miller's coming up next right here on the team.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.